Hi, I'm Leela Ainge, a psychologist researcher and someone who's been thinking a lot lately about what makes life feel really good. Welcome back to Psychologically Speaking, a podcast all about human behaviour, bringing together fascinating research, insights and real life experiences. This season, we're exploring joy, not just the theory of it, although yes, we will get into that, but how joy actually moves through our lives, how it shifts us and what it makes us do. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Karen, a Manchester-based photographer and writer whose work is all about helping women and girls to be seen. Through natural documentary-style photography, Karen captures women busy and absorbed in their passions, whether that's running a business, creating art, or simply living life authentically. She works with female founders, creatives, and communities to tell real stories in words and in pictures, without studio lights or any forced poses. Hi, Karen, and welcome to Psychologically Speaking.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here and just spend more time chatting to you.
And every time we see each other, you are working. I don't know how you manage a room full of half nervous, half excited women, but you do. We've probably known each other for, I want to say, a few years.
And it's measured either pre or post COVID normally, isn't it? And I feel like online was pre-COVID that we've been following each other. And then we met in a doorway, as I remember, the first...
We did! was that in Manchester? It must have been in Manchester.
Yeah, it was a Doing It For The Kids event.
I was doing a talk on imposter phenomenon because over COVID, I did a lot of my research on online communities, and Doing It For The Kids was one of those communities. So then I went back and spoke about the results, and you were there doing all the photography. So I do remember that. And then I have joined your passion and purpose club, because the last photography I had done was, I think, 20. I've had about 40 hair change colours since then. And I just never got round to updating my photography. And then somebody mentioned you did a club. And that's perfect, because I can rock up. Then if I want something different, I can go to another club and get different types of photos. And that felt like it suited me better.
I think it's hopefully it alleviates a lot of the pressure, doesn't it? You know, thinking to shoot and then plan a shoot and what am I going to wear and da-da-da-da. All these things. So it hopefully alleviates a little bit of that overthinking that can go on.
And it does. I think when it comes to our own self-image, it's the one thing that we're constantly aware of every day we look in a mirror. I was really excited to have you onto the podcast. One, because you're just a wonderful human, but this season is all about joy. And for me, I think passion and purpose really sums all of that up. So I'm just curious, you know, tell me a little bit about your inspiration for setting up a photography club. What is it? Where did it all come from?
Well, mentioning COVID again for the second time, obviously during COVID, well, for one thing, I couldn't work because as a photographer, you know, I need to be with people, and a lot of that takes place in spaces. So it was partly kind of like, what am I going to do when we all come out of, you know, hiding and that craving to be around other people? So part of it was kind of a little bit of a business pivot, I think. I need more, as a lot of people did during COVID, you realise how reliant you were on certain source of income if you were, you know, yourself. So part of it was, I need an alternative to photo shoots and relying completely on those. But then I suppose the other thing was, I'd previous to COVID, I'd attended lots of women's networking groups, business groups, which I really enjoyed. And a lot of the times I'd be there to do the photographs, like we're doing it with the kids, doing it for the kids. So, and I always loved that. And I got a lot of joy out of seeing people's reactions when it came to the photos, that they'd be like, oh, you know, don't catch me on any, or, you know, can you remove my double chins, you know, all of this sort of thing. And it was lovely to be able to kind of say, look, these are just, you go and do your thing. You won't even know I'm taking a photograph. So that had stuck with me as well. So, yeah, early 2021, I actually went on Instagram. You know those things where you think, I'm going to say something out loud.
Yeah.
See what happens. Rather than try and plan and launch and perfect it all. So I went live on Instagram and kind of said to the people that were following me at the time, had this idea of bringing women together who are following their passion, whether that's work or, you know, something different, and doing photos at the same time. So one, you don't feel alone having your photo taken. You're surrounded by other people to cheer you on and help you and, you know, ideas and all those sorts of things. And secondly, this idea of making it repetitive. So every month, coming again, and getting more and more used to the camera. That's kind of where the idea came from. It was quite selfish in one respect because I was deeply lonely through COVID, missed being around particularly other women. And I know what difference communities can make to you if you're a solopreneur or, you know, working for yourself, freelance, whatever it might be. So it was selfish as well. It was like, I want to be around women more often. I know I get uplifted when I come away from a good networking event.
Yeah.
So that was the thinking. When I did this video on Instagram, I was kind of a little bit shocked because I got all of these messages straight away saying, I'm in, sign me up, where are you doing it, when's it start? So very quickly we got a couple underway in Cheshire initially. And then, and it's like grown geographically. So we're in London now, we're over in Leeds, we've got Stockport, Manchester. And the women, I mean, you've met them, but the women.
I have, yes.
So you want to talk about joy? It's just incredible to watch. You've got like women that are in all sorts of different moods, different stages in menopause, periods, marriages, children, not just. So many different things, but having this common thread that they are following a passion and want to share more of it with the world. But as you've touched on, that isn't quite as straightforward as it first.
It isn't. So, I love the kind of eclectic mix of people that you get at the club. And for me, I think I hadn't realised that a lot of the communities that I'm in, I see a lot of the same people. So when I came to the first one in, I think it was in Knutsford with you, and it was just, I met people I'd never seen before, which it sounds weird, but I think when you've been in business for a few years, you do tend to see the same faces on LinkedIn, and getting out there and meeting lots of different people, it does take a bit of effort, doesn't it, to kind of push yourself into new spaces. And it was such a joyful thing to do.
I've never thought about it like this way, but maybe there's something in the fact that it's combining those two things. You know, you do have to make the effort to be part of communities and lift yourself up. And also you do have to make the effort to be visible. It's not something that comes naturally to a lot of us. Maybe kind of this next younger generation coming up will be different. I don't know.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because certainly I was watching, have you watched the Educating Yorkshire series at all on TV? Yeah. And so there was an episode I was watching last night with my husband, and it was an episode where there's a child who has taken a photo in a space they shouldn't have taken a photo in. And Dave and I are looking at each other going, oh my God, we never had mobile phones. I mean, I didn't even have a mobile phone when I was at university. So I was just thinking, wow, it's a completely different generational shift. And as a psychologist, I know that, you know, body image, young women, and I mean, you know, under 21s are exposed to probably 50 times more perfectionist images than I ever was as a young person. So yeah, it's a completely, completely different world.
And I think maybe they've got the access, like you say, to, you know, this tool in their hand at pretty much all times, but they've got much more noise. So that comparison, not looking at, you know, all these things that are fed to them around body image, I think that's possibly harder than we had it. There was breaks from it, weren't there? You know, you picked up a mic, watched television, but you had spells of time where you weren't exposed to it, maybe. But yeah, who knows?
I think there's that it's interesting. I think that one of the key things is the authenticity gap, if you like. So I think we were probably very aware. I mean, I was a kid in the 90s. I was very aware when I picked up Cosmopolitan magazine or, you know, Just 17, that was around when I was a kid. I was very aware those images would have been touched up. And I mean touched up, airbrushed was the word we used to use. But now it's a whole different level of layers. There's, you know, filters that can be used. People are literally changing quite a lot. And those tools that would have only been accessible to your big fashion houses are now available in everyone's pockets. So that authenticity gap is wider and it is more pronounced, I suppose. So I think that's probably it, isn't it? It's not that there's less, there's more of it, but it's just that it's manipulated in a more obvious way.
Definitely right. And obviously you've got the onset of AI and things like that. It's all impacting it. But I think for that reason, being more authentic actually will stand to make you stand out more in future, embracing more of that. But yeah.
And I think, and then there's this idea, you know, from a psychological perspective, seeing images of portraiture isn't a negative thing. It's actually a really positive thing. So we know that exposure to what we call an idealized body type can be quite negative. But the more you see your own image in all its authenticity and all of its glory, then that can boost positive feelings and well-being. So it's this idea always with psychology where I say psychologists like to sit on a fence. You know, we don't say something is completely bad or completely good, but it's the nuance of how are you then using photography in your business and in your life. And I think that's something that I hadn't appreciated until I started taking more selfies and taking more photos. It's just how that perception shifts. There's something about the photos you took of me where I've not tried to capture a particular perfect image and you've just taken pictures, did photography in a space where I'm just chatting as I normally would. And I look back at those and I was like, wow, I really like these. They're me. And it felt me. It was just that authenticity. Yeah, I think that's just psychology in action there, isn't it? Whereas we can try and stage stuff, but we might be less impressed with the results at the end of it.
And I think if you personally care about coming across being very authentic, that's jarring, isn't it? This kind of perfect posed kind of selfie. Which you would, that expression wouldn't exist when you're talking to someone. So yeah, it is, and as a photographer, it's really lovely being able to tap into that and those moments. I always say, like, if I'm taking somebody's photo, and I've probably said this to you as well, that like holding yourself stiff and smiling at the camera is the least natural thing. We're humans, we breathe, we move, we blink, all of those things. So yeah, it's lovely to hear that you enjoy your images.
And Karen, you definitely had to tell me to breathe last time you took my photo. I do forget, I kind of hold myself, and I do that thing where it's like, I need to hold myself.
You're not on your own.
No. Talking of what you get to see behind the lens then, what do you notice when you're taking photos of women that you wish they could see in themselves?
It's, it's so many things. I think for me personally and my style of photography, it works best when it's part of a conversation and saying it's fluid and all of those sorts of things. So when I'm taking that photograph of, say, you, I'm looking at you, but I'm also absorbing what I've learned about you, what you're passionate about. I'm seeing what your natural smile looks like. And I just wish that women could see that part of themselves, because it's like if you talk to your family, loved ones, friends, that's what they're engaging with, is without even realizing that, you know, the little twinkle in your eye, you know, the way you move your head, the way you laugh, kind of body language, what you're doing with your hair, touching your face, all of those sorts of things are like subtly connecting as people to each other.
Yeah.
So it's a funny thing that if I just point a camera at somebody, if they literally walked in front of my camera and I didn't know a thing about them, I think I'd take a very different photograph to the
one. That's very interesting.
Because there's that little bit of, hopefully, that connection is starting to happen. So when I look at a photograph, like, I love photographs of people when they're, like, mid-laughing. Look too long. They're probably the least flattering, you know, in a weird facial expression. But when you know, we talk about social media, when you're flicking through, they're the photos that make me stop because I go, oh, wow. What, you know, it's kind of what's making her laugh? Well, because she just looks alive in a picture.
Yeah.
So the irony is what I see when I'm taking somebody's photo is not necessarily about that captured image. It's just, it's some sort of energy or something. I don't, it's really hard to explain, but I just wish we could kind of see that in ourselves. Because as you were saying, holding a camera up like this,
it's a different representation. Yeah. And it's interesting what you're saying there, because that really lines up then with what we know psychologically about facial expressions. So there's this idea that facial expressions, where we're kind of tuned in right from being a baby to recognize two eyes, a nose and a mouth, you know, and we've all seen, if you've had children, those black and white images, you know, we are predisposed to gravitate towards a face, a human face. And then as adults, you could show somebody a portrait, which is like a full body portrait, but it's the face and the facial expression that is the thing we know that draws us in. So when you're saying actually there's some energy about the movement in the face and the expression, it's because we have these really key facial expressions that are quite universal. So things like surprise. So I think surprise is one of them. Joy is another one. Anger. They're like, there's some kind of universal facial expressions that we can just very easily interpret. So there's no cognitive load there. You know, we look at someone and they are what they say on the tin. It's like, oh, that's a happy person. Great.
And I think it's, you know, like I was thinking then when you were talking, like, I don't know, say fashion photography, unless it's makeup and beauty, it's obviously focused on the overall person. So we're looking at the clothes and things.
Yes.
And you don't feel a connection, personally think, to a fashion model. You look at the clothes and you like how they're dressed or whatever.
It's the aesthetic, yeah.
It is, yeah. And I think there's something about, like, I do shoot in studios, but there's something about capturing women in just kind of quite more natural environments, whether it's, you know, cafes or just in an event space, but talking to each other, all helps that come to the fore. And the irony is, it's what we're displaying to everybody we're talking to. But the minute we put her in front, we try and act differently.
We should talk about feminism then, shouldn't we, at this point? If we think historically about portraits, they were for the privileged, you know? Yeah. Painting portraiture was for the privileged. And then even cinematic photography, again, it was quite expensive. And it was very rarely for women. And by women, for women. It was by men, for men, about stature, about power. And portrait photography now, as a business owner, it's taking ownership of narrative. That feels very feminist to go, I'm not going to sit and have this boardroom like Head and Shoulder. And I'm going to share something with you. So I've got a photo here. And I don't know if you can see that on the screen or not. There we go. But that photo was taken of me when I started a job with a consultancy. And when they sent the photos back, I was horrified because they'd airbrushed it. My skin doesn't look like that at all. And then for years, that was the only Head and Shoulders photo I had. So it was jarring because it's a beautiful photo, 10 years younger than I am now, and it's on my student card, but I just keep it there as a reminder that I think I'm a very different person now to the person who sat there and let somebody take a staged photo of me to present me as a brand for another company.
There's so much wrapped up in that, isn't there? I mean, relating back to what you said at the beginning about the galleries, I mean, you can still walk around portrait galleries and you'll see man after man after man.
Yeah.
So that's you know, that's still the case now.
Mm.
But in terms of, like, you know, somebody airbrushing your photo,
I know.
It's like, that to me is like taking your power away. That's kind of saying you're not good enough as you, you know, as you are. So I am taking the decision to alter your appearance. It's when I don't do a huge amount of corporate work, but I am occasionally, there's some companies that I work with where I go in and I'll do, you know, new headshots and things like that for the teams. And it's terrifying every single time. And it's always the women that kind of say, will you airbrush me? Will you make me a couple of
stones? Oh, wow.
Will you remove my document? Yeah. Whereas most of the guys that have the shots will turn up, sit. There's nothing attached to it. So there's that, there's the power imbalance, but there's also the fact that, you know, we've just been so conditioned to think only look a certain way, and that how we look without all those things is not enough.
It's quite staggering, really, because I had a quick look at some of the psychology research on body image and what kind of research is happening. And what I found really stark in the journals is that there's very little research on natural or candid photography of women. So I did a search and I was like, oh, tell me about what kind of research have we done psychologically about candid photography and benefits, health benefits, well-being, nothing. Wow. As soon as I put in, what are the disadvantages of filtered images? And then there's just a plethora because we see it as such a negative. And again, in psychology, we love to focus on the negative. But I feel like, you know, by doing that, we do need to address that conversation to say, actually, if you have images of yourself in nature that you're able to reflect on, I mean, that is a way of having nature well-being and doing all of that kind of stuff. But it was just very interesting. And then I started thinking about women who've used photography in quite a subversive way as part of their art. And there's one photographer, I'm not a massive kind of expert in their work at all, but there's a photographer called Cindy Sherman, and her images are really striking because she's done a series of photos over her decades of work, but she puts women into stereotypes like the bombshell or the career woman, and again, it's just how we tend not to do that with men. So it is very interesting when we look at all these stereotypes and how we think women are using photography. Wouldn't it be great in 5 years' time that if I'm searching, going, show me case studies where women have used candid photography to feel good about themselves without filters, etc.
Yeah, definitely. Let's make that happen.
Exactly.
Like, I see it in the women that I work with, and when they share their photos, they'll say, you know, they'll get comments on just, there's a connection it sparks, I think, when it's candid and it's authentic,
yeah,
those sorts of things. But yeah, and I think it's funny, there's Emma DeBeery. I don't know if you're familiar with any of this.
I'm not, no.
That she talks about, but she wrote a book. In fact, I've got it here. I'm trying to guess. Disobedient.
All right.
So Reclaim Your Unruly Beauty. But she talks in that about, you know, if you go further back, you've got this, I don't know, they'd even call it portraiture, but, you know, paintings of larger women and different shapes and things like that, and how that was celebrated. And
yes, yeah.
It's a really good book. I think you would get a lot out of it.
So in that kind of like classical imagery of women, yeah, they were much fuller. It was about, you know, lavish and that kind of thing. But that idea, I mean, you said there about the social. I mean, photography is very universal, and it kind of helps us with social bonding and memory as well, doesn't it? You look back. I love how photography can just change something for us. I wonder then, because you're experiencing over and over again monthly these wonderful women coming together, what do you think we can learn from the women that you have brought together? What do you think they're discovering about their self-image when they work with you?
I think the biggest thing that I see is the how closely they hold on to these images. You know, that they'll come initially maybe with an idea that they just want this the perfect picture, that their makeup's perfect, their hair's perfect, all of these things. And they're holding that idea very, very tightly. And the biggest thing that I see is that they just start to relax.
Yeah.
And photos just become a very small part of those catch-ups.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, I'll play. What do you think we should do this time? Whereas at the beginning, it's more about, well, I want a shot with my laptop and I want this shot.
Yes.
And did it, and it's very kind of, you know, a tight brief. And what happens is they begin to relax and realize that, you know, their images don't have to be perfect. And then they begin to see that actually the ones where we talked about the laughing shots or things like that, the ones where they've completely let their guard down, when they share those, they're getting more engagement. There's more connection to them. So it's this loosening that happens. I mean, I'm not saying that like every one of us within the club adores our own image and, you know, we're 100% comfortable and confident in it now, because I think some of these things are so ingrained over our lifetime. Mm. It is hard to break down. There's a loosening and a realization that having that imagery and being visible is important, but it being perfect or living up to a certain standard isn't. And just putting themselves out there in, you know, sharing more of themselves, the more natural selves, is what's important. So I feel like that's what we see. I mean, outside the images, the sisterhood of it, the support need, and there's all of those amazing things that happen. But in terms of the images, they just start to hold them less tightly.
My kind of takeaway from the last one I went to, so the first, I've been to two different ones. So the first one I went to was, you had this genius idea of hosting in a showroom at Neptune in, it was Knutsford, wasn't it? And it was just gorgeous. I mean, I always joke, I use my kitchen a lot. I love cooking, but it is then therefore what I would consider not perfect for lighting or anything. You know, it's very much a dark hole. This showroom was gorgeous. And then you've got a group of women sat around a bench and table. And it was just, it was like having coffee with some friends. So that was a beautiful shoot. And then the second shoot I went to was in, it was in Manchester, where I lived for 10 years. So for me, it was so nostalgic. It was being in the Northern Quarter. It's being around lovely people. You know, I'd got a train early that morning. My hair had gone flat, wandered into a hairdresser's and said, could you just curl my hair? And they did it for me. And, you know, that was lovely. But the best thing for me about that one was we went out on location. So we were in the streets and we were with a small group. And then it felt like you got your own little cheering squad. It was like you got your own little coaching squad saying, well, you'd look good against that, or, you know, you look good here, or we love that, or that's a great colour for you. And that was so nice. And we talk a lot about the visibility and comparison with women and, you know, whether we should be supporting each other and how we support each other and how it can be very difficult to do that. And yet you've made it effortless with the club, because, you know, we're all there seeing each other in quite uncomfortable spaces sometimes and putting ourselves out there and saying, I'm not sure about this. And everyone's going, go on, do it. You can do this. You've got it.
Well, it's, I really appreciate you saying that and those like two examples.
Yeah.
What we do try and do with the photos is keep changing things up, you know, different venues for one thing, but like at some clubs in the past, we've taken images of each other. So mobile phone stuff and all of it. I think it's play, isn't it? It makes it joyful instead of, well, does this thing come in that I really dread doing? And whether it's doing it in small groups or like we did in Manchester, getting outdoors and being in front of different graffiti in the streets. And
which was amazing. It was wonderful graffiti.
It's gorgeous. Well, the water is just, and it's always changing as well, which is...
It is, it is. It doesn't stay the same, that's for sure.
But yeah, and play it a bit. play with it more.
I think the playful thing really comes across. And I think that's something that I struggle to do with photography because I'd not relaxed. Like you said, I got this idea of what perfect photography should look like. Or my first photo shoot for my business was very much, I set up a workshop. I got people to the workshop. I bought a photographer in. And that was good. We got quite a lot of candid photography, but I remember being so nervous and I put a lot of pressure on myself to get all the photography shots that I wanted in the day. And I just knew I did not want to do that again. Well, not for a while anyway. But if I could ask you a personal question, I'm quite intrigued then. So what's your relationship like with your own image and how has that changed over the years, having a photography business?
Probably like a lot of women, it's complex.
Yeah.
I think there is something in, and I don't know whether this has come about from having pictures taken of me or photographing other women, I think probably a mixture of both, where I'm just way less critical, I think. When I look at images of me, so we've got an amazing photographer that's in the group as well who takes photos of me when she attends, which is brilliant for me as well. You know, put me in the, not in the spotlight, but, you know, I get to see it from everybody else's perspective. And when I get the images that Heather creates, I'm just genuinely excited because I've got something new to share.
Yeah.
Like none of it, I don't look at those photos anymore and kind of go and judge how I look in them. And obviously I'll have favourites. I'll be like, I like how I look on that one or what I'm doing or whatever. But so in terms of photography and still imagery and talking to camera and all of those sorts of things, I find that really easy. But there is still part of me that can find it difficult to look in a mirror, that, you know, will look at my weight or, I mean, I turned 50 this year, so like...
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. but, you know, that I've almost heard that narrative turn up a little bit more in my own mind around how I should look and all those sorts of things. So it's a tricky balance, but funnily enough, in terms of photo and video, I'm kind of like, I don't care anymore. It's just a means of connecting with other people.
So we said psychologically that if we are exposed to non-authentic images and filters, then it will make us feel bad about ourselves. If we are exposed to authenticity and perhaps an image that is closer to who we authentically are, there's less dissonance. Women are definitely given this biological bump around menopause years where our body changes anyway. So, of course, how we feel about it's going to change. And it's interesting, there's this idea that women recognise their own body parts much better when they're younger. And this is a really interesting study. So it was done this year. 276 women took part. And what they did was they gave women images of body parts and asked them if it was their own body part or somebody else's. It's called like a self-body advantage. And the idea is that women who are younger found it easier to recognise their own body parts, which is...
Wow.
I've not read this in detail, so I'd love to know which body parts were they looking at. The thing that was really interesting, the older we are, we struggle. They distorted some of the images, so they made women's bodies appear thinner or more idealized, and women really struggled with that of seeing a thinner version of themselves, because one, I think the authors are suggesting that, but you know, psychologically we're just not comfortable with a thinner version of ourselves. It's critical to ask why are we doing these studies as well as the outcomes of them.
Definitely. And it makes me think, like, are we looking at ourselves less as we get older? Is that where, you know, kind of that, you know, looking in the image when we're getting dressed in the morning? But also it made me think of, there are sometimes, you know, like when you walk past a shop window or something, like I'm almost shocked by how I look, not negative, not positive, just, and I don't know whether, like, I almost still see myself at a certain age. You know,
yes.
It's fine. And then a you know, a disconnect when I kind of see myself up close or something. But yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. But like you say, it's something like I'd love to learn more about, but in order to emphasize the positives to women.
Yes.
So that, you know, definitely. They can take, you know, joy in what their bodies look like as they grow older. But yeah.
I wonder if some of it is just how busy we are in midlife as well. I think my friend Emma Thomas, she's been on my podcast before, would say, you know, we have this messy middle and we get very busy. So I probably spend fewer hours in front of a mirror. Even my makeup routine is a lot shorter than it was maybe 8 years ago. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Potentially, I am more comfortable with putting less makeup on, I think, post-COVID. But also, I probably get interrupted 4 or 5 times. Spellings, where's my shoes? Where's my school trousers? It
really makes a lot of sense because my daughter's now 16, obviously much self-sufficient. So I've got less of those interruptions. And I'm starting to find joy in makeup again.
Oh, wow.
Purely as something that I can enjoy and experiment
with. Yes.
As opposed to probably the younger version of me that was, you know, trying to mirror a trend or look a certain way.
Yeah.
But I think there's also, I won't swear, but there's the whole thing of giving less F's.
Yes.
Everything as we get older. Because I think there's the passing of time, there's this idea that, you know, there is an end point, so let's make the most of every minute and losing that worry of putting your makeup on or wearing certain things just starts to, I don't know, it matters.
You know, there's certain measures of well-being that can be quite stable throughout our lives. And so life satisfaction, that kind of thing. And then, you know, we become more satisfied as we become older, that self-acceptance is there. I really appreciate you answering the question around your own image. And it was a point of curiosity for me at the last one. I thought, I wonder who takes your photos, you know, and how you navigate that. And it's lovely to hear that you've got that too.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the questions I got really was, if there was a dream location you could use, so you could phone up tomorrow and say, right, this is the location I want to use for a passion and purpose club, what would it be and why?
So this is a tricky one. Because at first my brain goes to, you know, really beautiful locations with great natural light and all of those sorts of things. But I think because ultimately I want what I do and the experience that these women have as being part of the club and with each other to matter and to make a difference. So that question makes me think about like going and hosting a club in a school or taking it somewhere where other generations, I think you mentioned it right at the beginning.
Yeah.
I've got my own daughter, which really connects you back to your own teenage years, your 20s and things that you were worrying about and all the stuff that you've sorted out ever since. And I love the idea of kind of being able to just share some of what happens in that club with a younger generation.
That would be such a powerful and feminist statement to make, to take a group of women in business and to really have that photography session unfold in front of the eyes of a generation that have been brought up with filters. Wow.
And how
that's such a creative idea.
What we could learn from them as well.
Because yes, totally.
We've discussed we might have different views about what makes a good photo. But I just love the idea that, what we could learn from each other as well. And I wish there was something like this that existed for my daughter where she could go and be herself, because I think ultimately that's what the clubs are allowing women to do. I hope that's what it's allowing them to do, that they can come, they can be themselves, they can share their what they're anxious about or what where their joy lies, all of those different things without judgment and only ever with support and inspiring each other. And I just think, gosh, if something like that could exist for my daughter and that generation. So, I think there's loads of fancy venues that where my mind went first. I was like, no, schools, like going on tour.
something really interesting, isn't there, about a child's perspective on things. I'd gone for a walk into town with my little one, and there was this beautiful green door, and I just thought, I'm going to get a photo of myself in front of there. And I've started taking my little tripod out everywhere I go, and I've only got an iPhone. I'm trying to just take more photos of myself, and he's watching me. And I'm like, do you want to take a photo of me? So he took a photo, and he's like, you need to relax. And then he said, let me show you. And so he then went and sat on these steps and did a pose. And it was just so natural, the way he just posed and got it. But also it was so natural because he just didn't care. He just did it, you know. But that was such a lovely little moment. And I want him to remember a mum who's happy to have her photo taken. And I want him to remember a mum who isn't hiding. I think as when I grew up, women in my family, I think I do remember them not being body confident. And so that feels very important that we do. I think women business owners, I think we don't give ourselves enough credit sometimes for all of these additional confidence and visibility things that we have to do to be successful. Yeah. You want to sell, you've got to get yourself out there, right?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think like when you start a business, you initially think it's all about generating income and the more structural side of it, but so much of it comes back to mindset, doesn't it? And
yes,
and you know, being more visible. And but also I think as well that also the majority of my work is you know, with women like yourself that are running their own businesses or following a passion, but that visibility is in all areas of our lives, isn't it? And when I think about like my mum and my grandmothers and things like that, they just didn't share a lot of themselves. They saw it as showing off almost, you know, if they, I don't know, if they bought a new outfit or they did something nice for themselves. So I think this visibility and the taking up space, all the cliches.
Yeah.
It spills into so many different areas of a woman's life. And
we're pushing it back against those internalized misogyny tropes, you know. And that is internalized misogyny. Keep small. Don't brag. Don't be too loud. Who do you think you are? Who does she think she is? And these things are narratives that I think we've all grown up with, you know. And that's kind of what my research with Nikki Elliott was about with the Good Girl Economics. The report will be out soon. But yeah, these narratives definitely through the interviews and the survey that we've done do are very persuasive. They sit there, whether we think they do or they don't, they're definitely in there.
Yeah. And I think it's that, you know, it's not just controlling where we show up and how much space we take up, it's then the fact that we're, you know, manipulated into how that looks when we show up.
Yes.
All of those sort of things. I feel like I could talk to you for hours. I don't know how to anybody else, but I feel like I'd enjoy it a lot.
So I think where we've kind of landed here is that photography is a brilliant vehicle to feel good about yourself if it's used in the right way. And you have pocketed a way of doing that, which is to make it authentic and relaxed. And I can't emphasize the relaxed nature enough, because you can just turn up and chat to people and get a bunch of wonderful photos afterwards. That to me is just genius. But what is it, Karen, then? What is it that brings you single most amount of joy in your life?
It's going to sound like cheesy because it's so relaxed, but it's being around these women, honestly. I come away from the clubs on a high. I'm exhausted.
Yes.
Energy is low because I've obviously... It's a lot of hosting and doing all the photos. I come away with like a sense of accomplishment, and I'm inspired, and I've genuinely learned something at every single club that I go to. So there's that connection and that support with other women, because it's something that I didn't have up until like my 30s. Like I had fairly negative experiences with other women, certainly through childhood and and all sorts of things like that. So I didn't even realise that you could have these magical, absolutely magical connections with women that would just fill you up. It is that first and foremost what I think of, with like where my joy comes from. But like learning and reading and culture and theatre and art and things like that are also lots of big cup fillers for me.
Broaden and build theory of joy there and motivation, which is to have many interests and to be expansive. It's a good strategy, a really good strategy. I think that everyone who's listening will want to know, how do I get a bit of this? So there are different ways, aren't there, to be part of Passion and Purpose Club. You can be like a full-time member. I'm a bit of a part-time member, so I just kind of pay a quarterly amount and then pop in when I can to a shoot. But yeah, do you want to just tell us a little bit about the different types of membership that you've got?
Yeah, I mean, basically every club that is part, I'm always begrudged saying networking is connection, but you know, getting to meet other women, and then there's the photos. So every membership includes all those elements, but you can come every single month and you can move around different clubs. So you could come to, like you've done, you could come to Manchester one month, you could come to Cheshire another, London, wherever it may be. But then also we do a quarterly option. So you pay every 3 months and come once in that period when you choose. Then we also do a pay as you go. So people can just pay to come as a complete one-off to experience it. Or if they're just wanting to top up and get like a very, you know, small amount of photos or whatever. Although that should come with a warning, because you do generally end up joining.
I think that happened to me.
I think that's what you did. but yeah, so there's loads of options depending on how often you want to meet up, how many, how much visual content you need, and also your schedule, because we've discussed, we're busy people. So you know, we can find it difficult to squeeze something in every month. So that's the idea, that it stays really flexible. But yeah, that's it. Basics of it, really.
Thanks, Karen.
I should probably say as well, we do online clubs. So everybody that's a member, whether they're quarterly or monthly or whatever, can attend. We do two clubs every month. And one is just a meet-up so that you can meet members from other regions. And the second one is kind of finding out a little bit more about what you want to share as your
start, right,
your business, those sorts of things. So it's a little bit more thinking time. But yeah, like, thank you for just allowing me to talk about it. I love talking about it. Yeah, it's great to be able to combine that with a good old chat with you about all the psychology behind it all as well.
Well, it's such a fascinating subject. I've really enjoyed doing a bit of background reading for this, and also spending an extra hour with you is always a joy. So thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wow, what a fantastic conversation. Thanks for listening to Psychologically Speaking today with me, Leela Ainge, and with Karen. That's all for now, but a reminder to please like and rate and review the podcast. It really does help independent podcasters like me.